Did you see that video of the abo being translated?
No.
Yep, and the recording's on.
Whenever you're ready, Joe.
The start of 30.
Yep. He's going to read it from the Abbo Bible.
No, I'm not. There is no Abbo Bible. The word that came to Jeremiah from Yahweh saying, "Thus speaketh Yahweh, God of Israel, saying, write thee all the words that I have spoken unto thee in a book. For lo, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel and Judah, saith Yahweh, and I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it. And these are the words that that Yahweh spake concerning Israel and concerning Judah. For thus saith the Lord, we have heard a voice of trembling, of fear, and not of peace. Ask ye now, and see whether a man doth travail with child. Wherefore do I see every man with his hands on his loins as a woman in travail, and all faces are turned into paleness. Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. For it shall come to pass in that day, saith Yahweh of hosts, that I will break the yoke from off thy neck, and will burst thy bonds, and strangers shall no more serve themselves of him. But they shall serve Yahweh their God, and David their king, whom I will raise up unto them. Therefore, fear thou not, O my servant Jacob, saith Yahweh, neither be dismayed, O Israel, for lo, I will save thee from afar, and thy seed from the land of their captivity. And Jacob shall return, and shall be at rest, and be quiet, and none shall make him afraid. For I am with thee, saith Yahweh, to save thee. Though I make a full end of all nations whither I have scattered thee, yet I will not make a full end of thee, but I will correct thee in measure, and will not leave thee altogether unpunished. For thus saith Yahweh, thy bruise is incurable, and thy wound is grievous. There is none to plead thy cause, that thou mayest be bound up. Thou hast no healing medicines. All thy lovers have forsaken thee. They seek thee not. For I have wounded thee with the wound of an enemy, with the chastisement of a cruel one. For the multitude of thy iniquity, because thy sins were increased. Why criest thou for thine affliction? Thy sorrow is incurable for the multitude of thine iniquity, because thy sins were increased. I have done these things unto thee. Therefore all they that devour thee shall be devoured, and all thine adversaries, every one of them, shall go into captivity, and they that spoil thee shall be a spoil, and all that prey upon thee will I give for a prey. So I might stop there.
Yeah, halfway is good, or a third of the way if it's a long passage. There are a few things that I want to say here, but first I was hoping to see his promise where Isaac had blessed Esau. I'm really lost as to what chapter it is. Here we go, chapter 27 in Genesis. We did cover this chapter last week, but we could do it again today. We could continue now. I remember very clearly that we read this chapter last week. I'm sorry, David, I do. But this, I even made the quip last week. I made a kind of quip. If you look at... verse 6, see whether a man does travail with child, wherefore I do every man with his hands on his loins as a woman in travail. And then we have, alas, for that day is great, for it's even the time of Jacob's trouble. And I've always believed that now, and I've been explaining this in my Revelation commentary, that now is the time of Jacob's trouble, because it's the time that the yoke of Esau The yoke of Esau is broken, and Esau came to rule over his brother that we actually see promised in the blessing of Isaac to Esau. And Isaac blessed Esau and actually told Esau that he would break Jacob's yoke off from off his neck, because he had put Jacob as the head of his brethren and his blessing to Jacob. And that Esau would rule over Jacob for at least a time, right? And I believe that that blessing of Isaac to Esau in Genesis chapter 27 should be cross-referenced to this chapter of Jeremiah and to Revelation chapter 16 and 17, where the children of Israel are overcome by the dragon and turn their kingdom over to the beast, which is what I've been commenting on in these last few commentary podcasts on a Revelation I've been doing. So we're in that time now in Jeremiah, as far as I'm concerned, that time of Jacob's trouble, where Esau has the advantage over Jacob. And I think it's funny that in here in Jeremiah chapter 30, the time of Jacob's trouble is equated with a time where men act like bitches and have their hands on their loins as women in travail. And what do we have today? We have this parody of reality where men, where these faggot men think are acting like bitches and think that they could get periods and menstruate and have babies, even if they don't bleed. It's like this sick society that we're in, and this seems to be a reflection of it, if you ask me. Men with their hands on their loins as women in travail. That describes this whole disease of faggotry and trannyism that we have today. To me, it does. It's just a proper association.
Also, Satan coming out of the pit, that's another one of the bond of Esau being broken.
Yes, because Esau, just like Herod the Great, was an Edomite that represented the great dragon. Esau is the Satan is fulfilling the role of Satan in the world today, because Esau was the fleshly brother, as opposed to Jacob being the spiritual brother. And from the time that Isaac was placed on that altar, all world history is centered around that struggle between Jacob and Esau.
And here that 30:11 kind of summarizes the whole thing, because you see that there's chastisement, but they're not going to be destroyed. They're going to be preserved despite their sin. And that's kind of the whole chapter, because there's all these afflictions that are coming, but then he'll repay our enemies.
Exactly, and that's Revelation chapter 19. This should be cross-referenced with Revelation chapter 19. That Yahweh promised to make a full end of all the nations where Jacob is scattered. So where has Jacob not been scattered? Where has Israel not been scattered since they went into captivity?
And it says, therefore, all they that devour thee shall be devoured. And that's like Obadiah, where all those that fed on my holy mountain will be as though they never were.
Absolutely. User disconnected from and that should channel. Be cross-referenced. And once you look at the history of these white channel. European nations and what's going on today, all of this is clear. It's so clear, it can't be denied. To any rational man, can't deny it.
Microphone activated.
Yeah, but they will.
Of course, they have an agenda. Because they're not rational. Because they got their hands on their loins acting like bitches.
Right.
100%.
Microphone muted.
All they love is a forgotten me. Evidently, we're going to get to the point where all these nations that were seeking our favors once they think they have the upper hand, that they hate us, and that's exactly what's going on in the world today.
Stripped bare and naked.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and that should be cross-reference, too.
And look upon Zion. They want to look upon the kingdom of God, but they won't see the kingdom of God. Zion, I should say Zion. I keep saying Zion.
They only want what we have for themselves, but they can't create what we have. And they can't maintain it. And when it all falls apart, it'll be done and destroyed. And it's really out of the envy which the other races have for us. Because they can't create that. They think white neighborhoods, I think it was Dasho that put it very well. The niggers and the spicks and the chinks, they all think that white cities and countrysides are beautiful because it's holy dirt. And they want a piece of the holy dirt so that they could have prosperity also. But when they move in, it all turns to shit. And they don't understand why. They just want, gimme, gimme, gimme.
It's your racism, Bill.
It's I guess us. It's my racism, right. Because whites should just keep working for niggers and spicks and chinks.
That's how we're in bondage. That's how they're feeding on us.
Yeah, that is how they're feeding on. That's exactly how they're feeding on us in Obadiah. All those nations that fed upon my holy mountain are going to be as though they had not been.
They think they'll devour us completely.
Yes, they do. But it's not going to happen. And we have those assurances. And like I've tried to say, if the first 5,000 years or whatever prophecy had been fulfilled, well, we can't expect that the rest of it won't be. But I do believe that before it is, there's going to be a lot more pain. I really do.
Probably more for these people who are like tied themselves to the beast. They're going to suffer a lot more. Probably.
Well, yes, I believe so. And if you look at the Wisdom of Solomon translation I did today, where Solomon talked about the creation punishing the unbelievers and being merciful, the elements of the creation being merciful on those who are believing and obedient to Yahweh. That's also going on today. And it's going to get worse.
Therefore, all they that devour thee shall be devoured. And all thine adversaries, every one of them shall go into captivity, and they that spoil thee shall be a spoil, and all they that prey upon thee will I give for a prey. For I will restore health unto thee, and I will heal thee of thy wounds, saith Yahweh, because they called thee an outcast, saying, This is Zion, whom no man seeketh after. Thus saith the Lord, Behold, I will bring again the captivity of Jacob's tents, and have mercy on his dwelling places, and the city shall be builded upon her own heap, and the palace shall remain after the manner thereof. And out of them shall proceed thanksgiving and the voice of them that make merry, and I will multiply them, and they shall not be few. I will also glorify them, and they shall not be small. Their children also shall be as aforetime, and their congregation shall be established before me. And I will punish all that oppress them. And their nobles shall be of themselves, and their governor shall proceed from the midst of them. And I will cause him to draw near, and he shall approach unto me. For For who is this that engaged his heart to approach unto me, saith Yahweh? And ye shall be my people, and I will be your God. Behold, the whirlwind of Yahweh goeth forth as a fury, a continuing whirlwind. It shall fall with pain upon the head of the wicked. The fierce anger of Yahweh shall not return until he have done it, and until he have performed the intents of his heart. In the later days ye shall consider it.
Well, let's go back to verse 12. I know you started here with verse 16. That thy bruise, this is speaking to Jacob still, thy bruise is incurable and thy wound is grievous. And then where you started, therefore all they that devour thee shall be devoured. And what the prophecy is saying here, that it's going to look like our race is done before we're saved. I mean, the Jews are gloating now that whites are going to be a minority in their own countries, which is coming, probably not until 2040, 2050, but it's coming. And they'll be, when that happens, it'll look like we're done. It really will.
I've seen some of them say, like, by 2050, there won't be any more white people, but there'll only be white appearing people, if you know what I mean. That's what they say. By 2050, everyone will be mixed, they say.
Yeah, right. Some that's what they're hoping to do. Think about it. I mean, half of the people that appear to be whites now are not white. That they've got Jew in them, they've got some kind of Canaanite in them, or some kind of admixture in them, and they're not really white. And if it's only half now of whites are really white, what's it going to be after two more generations of marriage?
It'll be like days of Noah.
Microphone activated.
It'll be like ancient Israel too. Well, at the time of Christ, it was maybe, what, 20-25% of actual Israelites?
Yeah, in Judea, but it was probably also like that in Jeremiah's Jerusalem.
Hmm.
I mean, look at Ezekiel chapter 16. He was a contemporary of Jeremiah, and that my mother was a Canaanite and my father was a Hittite. And then in Jeremiah chapter 2, the admonitions against race mixing and the pleasant plant that sprouted strange slips and the sin that can't be washed off. I mean, most of Israel and Judah were gone already. And these inhabitants of Jerusalem at the time of Jeremiah, they must have been race mixed significantly. Which is why there were so many bad figs that weren't going to be returning in the 70 years in the building of the second temple. And then they went and screwed up.
And look at verse 21, and it says, and their nobles shall be of themselves, and their governor shall proceed from the midst of them.
Yeah, right, because now all the damn nobles are kikes. The whole British noble class is Jewish. The whole Prussian noble class is Jewish. They've been Jewish for 150 years. They've been intermarrying with Jews for 200, 250 years. Ever since the emancipation. And then in Disraeli, you actually had an outright Jew that was the British prime minister. And that was 140 years ago. And we think things just got screwed up? No. Things were screwed up for a long time before we were even born.
That's why we need the Bible, so we can see how our people really can live by his laws under our God. Because we're living in this crazy world right now.
Yeah, right. Well, the Bible should base us and give us a foundation for what should be reality. Where what we're seeing in the world today is a sick satanic parody. It really is sick, man. To get to the point where we've gotten now with it, with his open trannies and friggin' drag queen story hours for children in every city, and that is some sick sodomite bullshit.
Vexation. Vexation of spirit.
Well, there shouldn't be a chapter break. There shouldn't be any chapter breaks in the Bible. They're all wrong. I mean, most of the chapter breaks are in bad places. There definitely should not be a chapter break between 30 and 31. And this is going to feed right in all these promises of saving Jacob from all these strangers that are feeding off him. Go right into the promise of this New Testament and mercy upon Israel in the wilderness. That's the Israel of the captivity. That's not the people of Jerusalem. These chapters of Jeremiah, I mean, if the order is correct, because I believe it gets screwed up. According to it differs with the Septuagint from chapter 32, I believe. I'm gonna dig it out right now because it's almost that time in this walk through Jeremiah. At the end of Jeremiah in Brenton Septuagint is a chart comparing the order of the chapters with the Hebrew and the Septuagint. And I'm sorry, it already started in chapter 26. So chapter 32 in the Hebrew is really chapter 39 in the Septuagint. That's how bad the order of the chapters are. I haven't noticed it yet in the narrative, but I'm sure we will once we get far enough ahead. Well, once we get to the next point where kings, the names of kings are mentioned, I'm sure we will notice it. The very end of Jeremiah in the Septuagint chapter 31 in the Septuagint is chapter 48 in the Hebrew. Chapter 30, part of it, is chapter 49. And there's all snippets of 25, 30, and 39, and 29 that are mixed up into chapter 49 of Jeremiah in the Hebrew. It really gets confusing. Chapter 27 in the Septuagint is chapter 50 in the Hebrew.
User,
so there's a chunk of chapters in the Septuagint order. They should be a lot sooner in Jeremiah than they are in the order of Hebrew. So what we've done since chapter 25 is we've begun to skip those chapters because they're stuck at the end in the Hebrew rather than in the Septuagint where they're in the middle.
Well, we'll have to remember that when we get to the end, that those chapters should be somewhere around here.
Yeah, there's other chapters that should have been here that are at the end.
Should I read 31?
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of stuck with this King James order for our purposes here. If I did a commentary, I would want to fix the order before I did the commentary. And if Yahweh wills, and I'm still going in 5 or 6 years when I get to it, I might do a commentary on the major prophets. I mean, I would like to. I don't know if I'm doing Genesis or Isaiah next, to be honest, but I might. I'm kind of leaning towards Genesis right now.
Oh, no. I want Isaiah. I think Isaiah, but yeah, whatever. I'm happy.
Well, if I do a commentary on Genesis, It's going to be a commentary on highlights in Genesis, right? It'll probably be all of the first six chapters for sure. But then I'm just going to discuss highlights, I think, from that point forward, except for User important historical channel. Portions. And you can read Jeremiah chapter 31, but you'll have to excuse me for a moment. I probably right. should have went to the boys' room before we started, and I didn't.
That's all right, brother. At the same time, saith Yahweh, will I be the God of all the families of Israel, and they shall be my people. Thus saith Yahweh, the people which were left of the sword found grace in the wilderness, even Israel, when I went to cause him to rest. Yahweh hath appeared of old unto me, saying, yea, I have loved thee with an everlasting love. Therefore with loving kindness have I drawn thee. Again will I build thee, and thou shalt be built, O virgin of Israel. Thou shalt again be adorned with thy tabrets, and shalt go forth in the dances of them that make merry. Thou shalt yet plant vines upon the mountains of Samaria. The planter shall plant and shall eat them as common things. For there shall be a day that the watchman upon the mount of Ephraim, upon Mount Ephraim, shall cry, arise ye, and let us go up to Zion unto Yahweh our God. For thus saith Yahweh, sing with gladness for Jacob, and shout among the chief of the nations. Publish thee, praise ye, and say, O Yahweh, save thy people, the remnant of Israel. Behold, I will bring them from the north country, and gather them from the coast of the earth, and with them the blind and the lame, the woman with child, and her that travaileth with child together. A great company shall return thither. They shall come with weeping, and with supplications will I lead them. I will cause them to walk by the rivers of waters in a straight way, wherein they shall not stumble, for I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Hear the word of Yahweh, ye nations, and declare it in the isles afar off, and say, he that scattered Israel will gather him, and keep him as a shepherd doth his flock. For Yahweh hath remembered Jacob, and ransomed him from the hand of him that was stronger than he. Therefore they shall come and sing in the heart of Zion, and shall flow together the goodness of Yahweh, for wheat, and for wine, and for oil, and for the young of the flock, and for the herd, and young of the flock and of the herd, and their soul shall be as a watered garden, and they shall not sorrow any more at all.
That's then good, shall you think?
Yeah, there's a lot there.
Well, you could read two more verses just to get past this section.
Oh man,
I'm sorry.
For Yahweh hath redeemed Jacob, and ransomed him from the hand of him that was stronger than he. Therefore shall they come and sing in the heart of Zion, and shall flow together to the goodness of Yahweh, for wheat and for wine and for oil and for the young of the flock and of the herd, and their soul shall be as a watered garden, and they shall not sorrow any more at all. Then shall the virgin rejoice in the dance, both young men and old together. For I will turn their mourning into joy, and will comfort them, and make them rejoice from their sorrow. And I will satiate the soul of the priest with fatness, and my people shall be satisfied with goodness, saith Yahweh.
The priest, I really believe, in this historic context, and in the promises that we find in Exodus chapter 19, and in the way that the apostles use that term priests in their epistles, the priests aren't the Levitical priests in a prophetic sense, because there is no Levitical priesthood. It's done away with. It's abolished. The priests are those who would serve God, just as the people in Exodus chapter 19 promised to serve God, and were told that they were a nation of priests. And they weren't told of kings and priests. They weren't told that they were a nation with kings and priests, but they were a nation of kings and priests. And to me, that means that every man is a king and a priest in his own household, as long as he's serving God. So that being said, Jeremiah chapter 31, this word for families, it means a clan or a family. It's always used in a genetic sense of a genetic family. You could bring a nigger into your house, but you can't make him of your family. It just doesn't work. And expect that God, who promised all these things to the children of Israel, is going to accept your nigger. It's just never going to happen. And this, the people which were left to the sword found grace in the wilderness. All of this is pointing to the people, not of the Babylonian captivity, but the people of Israel and Judah of the Assyrian captivity. And they're the ones that are in the wilderness here. They were sent into the wilderness in order to repent and to rest. And I mean, that's all throughout the prophet, the last 25 chapters of Isaiah. That's the people that this has to be referencing, because Jeremiah was told at least three times, maybe four times, I think it was, in the early chapters of Jeremiah, like 2 through 16, to address the children of Israel when they were all deported by this time, and that they were in the north country, and say to the north this and that, and address the north, or face the north and address Israel, that they were all in the north country, and that's where they were brought into captivity by the Assyrians. So here we see it again in chapter 31, and this is in the context of the punishment and mercy on Israel in Genesis, in Jeremiah chapter 30, and this promise of a new covenant that we're about to encounter in Jeremiah chapter 31. All of this is one context. And even in verse 11 here, for Yahweh has redeemed Jacob. And in verse 9, I will bring them from the north country. It's all the same message for those people that were in the Assyrian captivity from the very beginning of Jeremiah. It's not addressing the people that would be in the Babylonian captivity a little later on. Not really, because they're not taken into captivity yet. So all these promises of Yahweh in these genetic families or clans of the children of Israel that are Jacob in the north country, that went to the wilderness, that woman in the wilderness in Revelation chapter 12, and we found grace because Yahweh had mercy on the children of Israel in the wilderness, and they're the same people that in the place where it was said to them in Hosea that you are not my people, that they shall be called the sons of the living God. All of this, it's so unmistakable that identity Christians are the only Christians that believe the prophets. We're the only ones that actually believe the prophets, and everybody else is just clowning themselves for real.
Yeah, because they were never scattered. He that scattered Israel will gather him.
Yes. Sing with gladness for Jacob and shout among the chief of the nations. Publish ye, praise ye, O Yahweh, save thy people, the remnant of Israel, in verse 7. It's all over these promises of a new covenant that this is only for those same children of Israel. And how could anybody read this and imagine that, oh, anybody who believes in Jesus can be part of the new covenant? Get out of here. They're just like, that they've got some kind of serious psychiatric disconnect in their brain synapses where they can't understand this and admit it.
Maybe they're being punished by God. Blindness is a punishment from Yahweh.
Yes, sir. And maybe they deserve more. Microphone. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it's the great delusion, right? That we're under a great delusion. But what you were saying earlier, it's just cognitive dissonance, right? And I feel like I'm always saying that, but that's what it is. You know, the way that, you know, Christians can look at what you're saying about the prophets and what they're writing, and then they can also look up Christ said, I came not to, I'm just paraphrasing, to change anything about what the prophets said. I've come to uphold it. But then they're all like, yeah, but who cares about the prophets, right? It's crazy. It's actually insane.
Right.
Like they're just completely ignore half of scripture, you know?
They don't believe the prophets. They should believe the prophets. In verse 4, it says, O virgin of Israel, but we know she was a whore, so there's something happening here where she's gone from being a whore to a virgin again.
Well, yeah, because her forgiveness is being planned, so once she's forgiven, she's a virgin again. Because God could do what men can't even do, because you wouldn't forgive your wife and call her a virgin again after she went fucking 50 other guys. No man would do that. I mean, I don't know how a man could live with that. But Yahweh can, because he's God and has a hell of a lot more mercy than men can possibly have, in my opinion. And that's what Paul said. I have espoused you to as a chaste virgin to Christ, right? In 2 Corinthians chapter 11. So yes. Paul's only repeating the prophets and understanding that the consequences of the prophecy.
And I think Paul refers to Eve's, you know, sin. Her, and he's talking about her, you know, when he's talking about that, doesn't he make a reference to Eve?
Yes, he did. And when he makes that reference to Eve and then says, I've espoused you as a pure virgin to Christ, that's a full indication that whatever Eve's sin was cost her virginity. And even if Adam and Eve had already been coupled before Eve was seduced by the serpent, right? If your wife is still your virgin. Well, when you marry a virgin wife, your wife is your virgin for the rest of your life. She's considered your virgin. But there's a lot of that sort of allegory, not only in the scriptures, but also in the Greek poets, where a man's, the wife of his youth was always considered his virgin. Even after she had 10 kids, she would still be his virgin, as long as she remained unsoiled.
Thus saith Yahweh, a voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation and bitter weeping. Rahel, weeping for her children, refused to be comforted for her children because they were not. Thus saith Yahweh, refrain thy voice from weeping and thine eyes from tears, for thy work shall be rewarded, saith Yahweh, and they shall come again from the land of the enemy. And there is hope in thine end, saith Yahweh, that thy children shall come again to their own border. I have surely heard Ephraim bemoaning himself thus, thou hast chastised me, and I was chastised as a bullock unaccustomed to the yoke. Turn thou me, and I shall be turned, for thou art Yahweh my God. Surely after I was turned, I repented, and after that I was instructed. I smote upon my thigh. I was ashamed, yeah, even confounded, because I did bear the reproach of my youth. Is Ephraim my dear son? Is he a pleasant child? For since I spake against him, I do earnestly remember him still. Therefore my bowels are troubled for him. I will surely have mercy upon him, saith Yahweh. Set thee up waymarks, make thee high heaps, set thine heart toward the highway, even the way which thou wentest. Turn again, O virgin of Israel, turn again to these thy cities. How long wilt thou go about, O backsliding daughter? For Yahweh hath created a new thing in the earth. A woman shall compass a man. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel. As yet they shall use this speech in the land of Judah and in the land and in the cities thereof, when I shall bring again their captivity. The Yahweh bless thee, O habitation of justice and mountain of holiness, and there shall dwell in Judah itself and in all the cities thereof together husbandmen and they that go forth with flocks. For I have satiated the weary soul, and I have replenished even sorrowful soul. Every sorrowful soul. Upon this I awaked and beheld, and my sleep was sweet unto me. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and with the seed of beast. And it shall come to pass that like as I have watched over them to pluck up and to break down and to throw down and to destroy and to afflict, so will I watch over them to build and to plant, saith Yahweh. In those days they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten a sour grape, and the children's teeth are set on edge. But every one shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eateth the sour grape, his teeth shall be set on edge. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Not according to the covenant I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was a husband unto them, saith Yahweh. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith Yahweh, I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know Yahweh, for they shall all know me, from the least of them unto the greatest of them, saith Yahweh, for I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more.
Okay. I've been looking at this, a woman shall compass a man, right? Just to get that out of the way. And the word for man there is not Adam and it's not Enosh, it's Geber. A Geber is a warrior man, a strong man, right? And that these damn kikes, that they've got all these weird tenses for their verbs that aren't like any other language, but that's because that's what the rabbis call those tenses. And they actually change the definitions with different tenses, and I don't agree with that. I think that's bullshit. That's my opinion. And screw those dumb rabbis. This word can mean to surround, or it can mean to turn around, to turn somebody around, or to change them in an allegorical sense. And in this tense here, they claim that it means to be encompassed. No, screw that. It means to be turned. It means to be turned around and made to change direction. And that's the meaning of the word in almost all its uses. And I'm not going to accept that it means something different in this use. I just don't accept that in this context. It's not a big thing for a woman to compass or to walk around a man or to surround a man with herself, which my wife does to me every time I hug her, right? That's not unheard of. What's unheard of is for a woman to repel a warrior. Nobody would believe that, but that's what it's saying here. And I associate that as a punishment for feminism, that women are going to be able to overcome men and make them retreat. And to me, that's a punishment for feminism, and that's deserved. And that's how I would interpret it here. Not as a woman that would encompass a man, but as a woman that would turn back a warrior. That's how I would have translated this. Of course, the voice heard in Ramah, Rachel died giving birth to Bethlehem, giving birth to Benjamin in Bethlehem, which was actually south of Jerusalem. This voice heard in Ramah, Rachel weeping for her children, represents Benjamin. Primarily, and the land of Benjamin, and it is really more appropriate on a prophetic sense in the fact that all of Benjamin was taken away, right? Mostly by the Assyrians, but a remnant with the Babylonians. So where is the tribe of Benjamin? That was the child. That child would have been special to Rachel because that's the child that she died giving birth to in Genesis. So that to me is the primary meaning of this. But of course, the secondary meaning is as a reference to Herod, who sent out into Bethlehem and slew every child in the entire region that was younger than 2 or 3 years old. I forget what it is exactly. It may have been 2 years old. So I mean, the Apostle Matthew used this used that incident as a fulfillment of this prophecy. But I think that this prophecy, like most prophecies, have dual fulfillments, mean more than one thing. And this is really speaking about the desolation of Judah, including Benjamin, in the time of the Assyrians and Babylonians, right? So we read, and there is hope in thine end, saith Yahweh, that thy children shall come again to their own border. So that's speaking about the children of Benjamin that were deported. We see this reference to Ephraim, which is characteristic of Hosea, but here we see it in Jeremiah, where Ephraim basically stands for the 10 northern tribes of Israel. Once again.
And Yahweh says, I do earnestly remember him still.
Right. Yeah, right. So where we read all the families of Israel earlier in the chapter, we have to. This adds context to that. We can't imagine that Israel is the church and any nigger that walks in the door is part of the church and can be Israel. That's just not true. It's never been true. It's just absurd in the light of scripture.
Thus saith Yahweh, which giveth the sun for a light by day, and the ordinances of the moon and of the stars for a light by night.
I wasn't really finished commenting on this section.
Sorry, I just noticed that I missed the end, and I thought, oh, I better sneak that in. But yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Okay, but not. I'd have wished you'd have stopped a little sooner, but that's all right. It is what it is. It's not that what we're doing is. I'm not that self-important. That this Wow. In those days, they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten a sour grape and the children's teeth are set on edge. I put that with Ezekiel, that there's a lot of prophecies in Ezekiel, and I think also in Jeremiah, that in the captivity and afterwards, that the children would no longer be punished for the sins of the parents, that it would come to a point where the parents alone are punished for their own sins. I mean... I know children suffer when their parents sin one way or another, but they wouldn't be punished outright for the sins of their fathers, as they very often were in the Old Testament. The fathers have eaten the sour grape and the children's teeth are set on edge, but everyone shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eats the sour grape, and the only thing I could associate that sour grape with, it is the sour grapes of Sodom and Gomorrah. Where the vine of Sodom is actually referred to as early as Genesis, I think. No, I'm sorry, Deuteronomy, speaking of the Canaanites, their vine is the vine of Sodom, and of the fields of Gomorrah, their grapes are grapes of gall, their clusters are bitter. We see in Genesis that the Sodomites were committing homosexual fornication, if I have to call it that. And in the book of Jude, that they were actually race mixing, that they were pursuing strange flesh as Sodom and Gomorrah. So Jude associates the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah with race mixing. And the same sort of race mixing that was committed in Genesis chapter 6. So that's very plausible. Sodom was seemingly the urban center on the Dead Sea at that time. It was the urban Mecca, if I should say it like that, at that time, that a lot of people would have flocked to such a city to conduct trade and to look for entertainment. So they were sodomizing and fornicating and basically race mixing in Sodom. So I equate those sour grapes with race mixing. that the day is going to come when men are going to be punished for it.
And earlier, Jeremiah was talking about bad figs, and he's not talking about agriculture. And then here, he's talking about bitter grapes and, like, how do grapes become bitter? And then Christ talks about knowing a tree by its fruits. So these aren't, you know, great literal grapes and literal, because who cares about, you know, literal grapes and literal figs?
Right.
So we're always using agricultural proverbs for an agricultural people to describe genetics.
Absolutely. It's all throughout the scripture.
It's always bad figs, bad grapes, bad plants, these slips,
strange
these tears,
right.
Thorns, bramble bush.
So here we have, yeah, there is another promise of a new covenant, but it's not called a new covenant in Ezekiel, where it's promised that a future covenant would be made. Ezekiel chapter 37, I believe it's at the end of chapter 37. And of course, this is in the prophecy of Israel and Judah being made one stick and being no more two kingdoms. So they shall be my people and I will be their God. Moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them. It shall be an everlasting covenant with them. And I will place them and multiply them and will set my sanctuary in the midst of them forevermore. So to me, these promises of a new covenant have been made and they've been assured in Christ, but they're not yet consummated. They're not consummated until the time comes where he sets my tabernacle among them and I will be their God and they shall be my people. And that doesn't really happen until the return of Christ. That's how I see that. Revelation chapter 19. And Acts chapter 1, that's when that happens. And here we have in Jeremiah a promise of a new covenant. And it's explicitly called a new covenant. So it really can't be mistaken. And of course, Paul of Tarsus in Hebrews chapter 8 had cross-references, had cited this in relation to what had happened in Christ. So, and Paul of Tarsus says that Christ is the husband that died to free Israel for the law, and this promise of a new covenant we see, although I was a husband unto them, and that these are all connected prophecies and fulfillments that can't be mistaken. Otherwise, just throw your Bible away. I mean, I can't see how this can apply to any other people but the children of Israel. It certainly can't. And he's promising them a new covenant, just as he promised in Ezekiel. And that has to be in Christ. Christ has to be that tabernacle. He is the tabernacle of Yahweh. And the Trinitarians can't get that.
Yeah, it's so true.
They can't understand that. That the body, as Paul called it, Paul called all of our bodies tabernacles for the Spirit. And that's what they are. Because if we're the children of God, then that Spirit is inside of us. And this body is only a temporary tabernacle for that Spirit. And it's the same thing with Christ, except that his Spirit was actually the Spirit of Yahweh.
Because Yahweh is the invisible God. We can't see him.
Right.
You see at verse 22, Bill, it says, For Yahweh hath created a new thing in the earth. That's the new covenant, isn't it? Or is that the kingdom that's coming or the stick?
Oh, you're talking about Ezekiel?
No, in Jeremiah, verse 22, it says, Yahweh hath created a new thing in the earth.
Oh, okay, I see it. I'm sorry. You know, I was reading the beginning of the verse.
That's all right.
And that's where it says, a woman shall compass a man. I really think that's because of the iniquity of Israel. How long wilt thou go about, O backsliding daughter?
So that's the new thing. Is this new thing is like the punishment then?
That's how I read it.
Oh, so the new thing is like, I'll create a new thing. A woman shall compass a man. So there's all these new things that are like afflictions.
Right. And I would translate that as a woman shall turn back a warrior Because that word for man is geber, which is a warrior, a strong, mighty man, or a warrior. And that word compass is more literally to turn back or to turn about.
Got it.
I mean, look at today. If we lived in a righteous, godly society, if a woman got in your face, she's taken the position that only a man should assume. And second, as her punishment for that, it would be righteous for you to just crush her. Just crush her. Don't let a woman get in your face and boss you around. This feminism bullshit's got to go. She should be under her husband's control. And if a woman got in my face, I wouldn't do it because I'd end up in prison for another 14 years. But I just want to crush her. In a righteous society, if I crushed her for getting in my face, everybody would just turn away and she got what she deserved. So a woman getting in the face of these mighty men, this happens all the time in our society today.
It does, yeah. Maybe you could say, like, maybe I've thought about, I've said to a woman, where's your husband? That's what I've said to her. I've said, where is your husband? Because I could have a word with him and he's not going to talk to me the same way.
Yeah, right. And that's absolutely how you should do it. I've never been put in that situation, but I've seen other men in that situation often. I would just say to her, don't you think I could crush you right now? Don't you think so? Where's your husband? Let me beat his ass because you're a bitch. Or something like that, right?
Microphone activated.
I've done that more than once. I'm not going to fight with you, woman, but go get your husband. I'll wait right here.
Yeah.
Microphone muted.
Yeah, but this is part of our punishment. When women can get away with that and do it, that's part of our punishment.
Should I finish this chapter, Bill?
Well, yeah, you're right. It's about time. I'm sorry. I think we covered everything appropriately. The high points, anyway.
Thus saith Yahweh, which giveth the sun for a light by day, and the ordinances of the moon and of the stars for a light by night, which divideth the sea and the waves thereof roar. Yahweh of hosts is his name. If those ordinances depart from before me, saith Yahweh, then the seed of Israel also shall cease from being a nation before me forever. Thus saith Yahweh. If heaven above can be measured and the foundations of the earth can searched out beneath, I will also cast off the seed of Israel for all that they have done, saith Yahweh. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that the city shall be built to Yahweh from the tower of Hananel unto the gate of the corner, and the measuring line shall go forth over against it upon the hill of Gareb, and shall compass about to Goath. And the whole valley of the dead bodies and of the ashes, and the fields unto the brook of Kidron, unto the corner of the horse gate toward the east, shall be holy unto Yahweh. It shall not be plucked up nor thrown down any more forever.
So in verse 37, that absolutely proves that the earth is flat. And if the dome can be measured from end to end, then we're just going to, the children of Israel are just going to cease to exist all of a sudden. They're all going to be cast off, I guess, off the edge of the flat earth. I'm kind of being facetious. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I hope the earth isn't flat then.
No, it's not, because actually, if it were, then you'd be on a pillar. Yeah, you'd be like under a pillar. It wouldn't work out too well. But this is basically saying that as soon as the Jews can measure the width of the heavens, then we're all done. I'm kidding. This is saying that is the seed of Israel is never going to cease from being a nation as long as there's a sun, moon, and stars, period. So it's not ever going to be a church because it's a nation. A nation, a goy, a people. The seed of Israel shall also cease from being a nation, not a church, a nation before me forever. So the seed of Israel must be, the true seed of Israel must have always been a nation before God.
And the same God that made the promise is the same God that gave the sun for a light by day and the ordinances of the moon. So he's a sovereign God. He can make this promise.
Yes.
But like when he says, as I live, saith Yahweh, well, he lives forever. So when he swears, as I live, that promise, it's going to be fulfilled.
Well, right. And the promise is going to be fulfilled the way they were made. The promises aren't allegories. They're not allegories where you could substitute other words for the meanings of these words. Where you could remove seed of Israel and insert church of Israel or yeah. Church of Rome or whatever.
Yeah, let's just cross out that word and write in whatever we want.
That's what they do. That's how they interpret all of this.
What about this Valley of Dead Bodies, Bill?
That's Revelation chapter 19. That's why I believe this is the culmin. This is the culmination of the New Testament. This is the marriage supper of the Lamb. Is the when the New Testament marriage is actually culminated. So the marriage supper of the Lamb is when all of the enemies of Christ are destroyed. And it's called the wedding supper of the Lamb in Revelation chapter 19. Revelation 19:9. Blessed are they which are called unto the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he saith unto me, these are the true sayings of God. And that's when the beasts and the kings and their armies are make war against the king and his armies, Christ and his armies, and they all go in the lake of fire. Revelation 19:9 from there on. So that's the marriage supper of the Lamb. That's the wedding supper of the Lamb, is when all of his enemies are totally destroyed. And there aren't any more spics, any more niggers, any more red, yellow, black, and brown, lake of fire, throw them down. That's when that happens. So we see that right here at the end of the promise of a new covenant in Jeremiah 31. And we see it right at the end of the culmination of the new covenant in Revelation chapters 18 and 19.
So when it is consummated, that's the end of the rest of them. It's a war. It's like a war and a wedding. Love, war.
Right. When all the woman's lovers are totally vanquished and she has no choice but to stay faithful to God.
User disconnected from your channel.
Now, what's better than love and war in life? The love of God and his wars.
Well, that's what the whole Bible story is about.
That's what we're about.
We have to. We have to be about that, or we're not true to the word. Now you can tell there's some missing stuff here as we start the next chapter, finally.
Can someone else read this chapter? Because I've got to go to the boys' room for a sec.
Yeah, go ahead. I don't know if anybody else is going to read it, but go ahead. If we don't get to it, we don't get to it. Martin's already gone, damn it.
Oh, I'm back. So, should I read it now?
Yeah, not yet. I just want to say something before we start this chapter. This is chapter 32 in Jeremiah. It's chapter 39 in the Septuagint. And there's several other chapters before this chapter in the Septuagint. But here, I mean, Jehoiakim was the king in chapter 27. Jehoiakim is the king at the beginning of chapter 35. In Jeremiah chapter 36, and it came to pass in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, right? And chapter 37, that's when Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, reigned instead of Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, all right? And that Coniah, the son of Jehoiakim, is actually Jeconiah, right? And I commented on that a few weeks ago, Joe, but I don't know if you were here. Jeconiah, when he's called Coniah in the word of God to the prophet, that's because Yahweh took the Yah part off of his name because he probably wasn't worthy of it and called him Coniah instead of Yah Coniah or Jeconiah. Do you understand the implication of that? So. Here, I mean, Jehoiakim's the king in chapter 35, chapter 36. Finally, Zedekiah is king in chapter 37. But in chapter 45, it's the fourth year of Jehoiakim. Chapter 46, the fourth year of Jehoiakim. But right now, we're in chapter 32, and it says that Zedekiah is the king. So these chapters are definitely severely out of order. Zedekiah is the last king of Judah. Jehoiakim ruled from 609 to 598. Jehoiachin, which is a really screwed up transliteration, but that's Jeconiah, and that is Coniah later in Jeremiah. Is king for only a couple of months, and then Zedekiah is made king from 597 to 586. So that's just a demonstration that these chapters are very much out of order. A quick one.
User entered your channel.
This chapter should be a lot later in Jeremiah because we're going to go back to Jehoiakim being king.
Got it. Yeah. It's all over the place sometimes.
Well, it is all over the place. And so is Daniel and so is Ezekiel. They're all out of order, the chapters in all three of those books. Thank you, beautiful. If we start 32, I don't know. We might finish it late, but you can go roll with it if you want.
Yeah. Well, we can at least make it halfway, I reckon.
Yeah, the 18th year of the Book of Nezar, if he came to the throne in 606 BC, what would, of course, be 588 BC. So this chapter should be much later in Jeremiah. We are not ready for this chapter yet, but we're going to do it because it's here.
Yeah. The word that came to Jeremiah from Yahweh in the 10th year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, which was the 18th year of Nebuchadrezzar. For then the king of Babylon's army besieged Jerusalem, and Jeremiah the prophet was shut up in the court of the prison, which was in the king of Judah's house. For Zedekiah, king of Judah, had shut him up, saying, Wherefore dost thou prophesy and say, Thus saith Yahweh, Behold, I will give this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall take it. And Zedekiah, king of Judah, shall not escape out of the hand of the Chaldeans, but shall surely be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon, and shall speak with him mouth to mouth, and his eyes shall behold his eyes. And he shall lead Zedekiah to Babylon, and there shall he be until I visit him, saith Yahweh. Though ye fight with the Chaldeans, ye shall not prosper. And Jeremiah said, The word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Behold, Hanamel, the son of Shalom, thine uncle, shall come unto thee, saying, Buy thee my field that is in the Anathoth, for the right of redemption is thine to buy it. So Hanamel, mine uncle's son, came to me in the court of the prison according to the word of Yahweh, and said unto me, Buy my field, I pray thee, that is in Anathoth, which is in the country of Benjamin, for the right of inheritance is thine, and the redemption is thine. Buy it for thyself. Then I knew that this was the word of Yahweh, and I bought the field of Hanamel, my uncle's son, that was in Anathoth, and weighed him the money, even 17 shekels of silver. And I subscribed the evidence and sealed it, and took witness and weighed him the money in the balances. So I took the evidence of the purchase, both that which was sealed according to the law and custom, and that which was open. And I gave the evidence of the purchase unto Baruch, the son of Neriah, the son of Maaseiah, in the sight of Hanamel, mine uncle's son, in the presence of the witness that subscribed the book of the purchase before all the Judeans that sat in the court of the prison. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, God of Israel, take these evidences, this evidence of the purchase, both which is sealed, and this evidence which is open, and put them in an earthen vessel, that they may continue many days. For thus saith Yahweh of hosts, the God of Israel, houses and fields and vineyards shall be possessed again in this land. Now, when I have delivered the evidence of the purchase unto Baruch, the son of Neriah, I prayed unto Yahweh, saying, Ah, Yahweh God, behold, thou hast made the heaven and the earth by thy great power and stretched out arm, and there is nothing too hard for thee. Thou showest loving kindness unto thousands, and recompense the iniquity of the fathers into the bosoms of their children after them. The great, the mighty God, Yahweh of hosts, is his name. Great in counsel and mighty in work, for thine eyes are open upon all the ways of the sons of Adam, to give every one to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings, which has set signs and wonders in the land of Egypt, even unto this day, and in Israel, and among other men, other Adam, and has made thee a name as at this day, and has brought forth thy people Israel out of the land of Egypt with signs and with wonders and with a strong hand and with a stretched out arm and with great terror, and has given them this land which thou didst swear to their fathers to give them, a land flowing with milk and the honey, and they came in and possessed it. But they obeyed not thy voice, neither walked in thy law. They have done nothing of all that thou commandest them to do. Therefore thou hast caused all this evil to come upon them.
I mean, I never really investigated this case of the field at Anatov. I've seen a lot of conjecture over the years concerning it. I don't even remember. I think Clifton's covered it, but I don't really remember what he said about it. So I probably don't know as much as I should about the field of Anatov, but I've rejected most of the conjecture over the years. I mean, some people have tried to claim that this was the Potter's Field where Judas of Iscariot was destroyed in. I don't buy that. I never bought that. Anathoth was an old place in Benjamin. Clifton wrote about it in, as early as Watchman's Teaching Letter number 21. See what he says about it. Tied into the Tiatepe story, which I think is mostly half myth and half truth. Long before the days of Ezekiel and Jeremiah, Nathan told David of this place of planting, 2 Samuel 7:10. We have already referred to Jeremiah's purchase of the deeds of Anatoth, concealing them prior to his departure from the land. To date, this hidden evidence of Jeremiah's right to Palestine has never been produced. Well, Jeremiah didn't have a right to Palestine. He only had a right to Anathoth. For they were continued in concealment for many days, Jeremiah 32, verses 14 and 15, a period which has not yet run out. So even the commenters, that's from a British Israel commenter that Clifton was citing from, and even the commentators, that they're just conjecturing. That's just conjecture. So I don't know if we have the full story of this field at Anathoth that Jeremiah purchased the right to through redemption. And if it was ever redeemed, where was it possibly fulfilled? I mean, it is true that Anathoth is, it does figure into the story of Ezra and Nehemiah, that there were 128 men, meaning families, that came back from the return and settled in Anathoth. But why that's different from any other place in this long list in Ezra chapter 2 or in Nehemiah chapter 7 is beyond me. It that alone doesn't distinguish it, right? It doesn't really do it. So, I mean, Anathoth is one of the places that are lamented by Isaiah in chapter 10, what is a lamentation of the lands of Benjamin. And Ramah and Anathoth are both mentioned among several other towns in Benjamin. So it's lamented in Isaiah chapter 10 as a place in Benjamin. And here we see it in Jeremiah chapter 32. It was Jeremiah was of Anathoth, and we read that in Jeremiah chapter 29. So and in chapters 1 and 11. So these places, three times, this description of this field in Jeremiah chapter 32 is basically the last mention of Anathoth. And I don't see any fulfillment of any of this or anything I could connect in the New Testament with any of this. I really don't see anything. So it's a mystery. What became with it, why it was purchased, was a mystery to me, because I can't see any other historical or biblical connections that come from a later time. But it was important to Jeremiah. He spent half a chapter on it. I don't know if anybody could add any of that, but you're welcome.
Well, it's interesting that he has a plot of land in a land that's about to be destroyed. It's like he has a plot because he's going off into bondage and he still has this plot of land in the Holy Land. Yeah. And is that symbolic to me? Like, we've all got like a plot of in his kingdom. You know, my kingdom has many houses and we've got rewards in the kingdom. I don't know. I was just thinking about that, you know, like Moses is seeking the promised land. Abraham is seeking the promised land. And we've all got this plot in the promised land, but we haven't reached it yet.
Well, on the other hand, you could say that Jeremiah had the money to buy a plot of land. He must have been like Joe Osteen. I'm kidding. I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some signification to it, but it's escaped me. I never really tried to study the issue because I never really saw anything that I could connect it to.
It'd be great if there was some, if we could figure out the meaning behind it, you know, right, precisely.
I don't even know exactly where. I would have to study this word Anatoth, but it's not really mentioned enough. It's mentioned in Joshua, okay. And out of the tribe of Benjamin, Gibeon with her suburbs, Geba with her suburbs, Joshua chapter 21, 16, 17, Anathoth, verse 18, Anathoth with her suburbs, and Almon with her suburbs, four cities. All the cities of the children of Aaron the priests were 13 cities with their suburbs. So this is one of the Levitical cities given to Aaron, the priest of Hebron, with her suburbs to be a city of refuge for the slayer, right? So Anatoth was a city of refuge, which I think is significant, that belonged to the Levites, and Jeremiah was a Levite, I believe. So that part is significant, that Anathoth was one of the cities of refuge in Joshua chapter 21. And it belonged to the Levites, for which reason Jeremiah had a right to them, because Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, was of the priests that were in Anathoth in the land of Benjamin. That's Jeremiah 1:1, right? He's a Levite from Anathoth. So he had a right to this land, and he bought it and redeemed it. So basically, he owns it wherever he is now. I mean, I don't think he can dwell in it right now. Maybe someday.
Apparently, Wikipedia says that Anathoth is that it was a city that it was named after Anat, A-N-A-T. Who was some sort of pagan goddess of hunting. And that the name is Ugaritic.
Well, according to the Brown Driver Briggs dictionary in Bible Works, it says that Anathoth means answers to prayer. Or maybe that's Strong's, but it's supposed to be. No, that's Strong's. I'm sorry. I don't know. I do know why, because my Bible Works keeps friggin' crashing. But full DBB, that's my analysis window choice, and TWOT, so I don't know why I'm only getting Strong's data for Anathoth. Maybe I have to switch over to Hebrew and find Anathoth in the Hebrew, which I could probably do pretty quick.
It is interesting that it's a refuge city. That's something.
Yeah, it's
definitely
a city of refuge, Joshua chapter 21. It must start with an I-N instead of the.
Yeah, so Wikipedia is saying the name is of. The name of this town may be derived from the Canaanite goddess Anat. It is also given as the name of an Israelite person. In First Chronicles 7:8, and in Nehemiah 10:19.
I'm sorry, Martin, you'll have to hit me with that again. I mean, I didn't really.
It's saying in Wikipedia, the name of the town may be derived from a Canaanite goddess, Anat. It is also given as the name of an Israelite person in 1 Chronicles 7:8 and in Nehemiah 10:19.
Yeah, that is. I'm looking at the Hebrew. I have to look at the Hebrew to see what Brown Driver Briggs says instead of it the King James. That does say that the name is derived from the goddess Anat. Okay, it does. But Strong's says it's answers to prayer. I don't know where he gets that definition from. I do recognize that it was a goddess named Anat from inscriptions, not really from scripture. So what did they say? 1 Chronicles 7:19?
No, 1 Chronicles 7:8.
Yeah, well, 7:8 is, and the sons of Becher, it's a list of a man's sons.
Yeah, it says
a name, and it's used of a male. So,
yeah, and so and it says it is also given as the name of an Israelite person in these verses.
Nehemiah 10:19. Yeah. Nehemiah 10:19 of a man named Anathoth is the one of the chief of the people. It's possible. I mean, I would want to study the Hebrew term in Strong's and look for the surrounding words and see what they might mean. And it's possible it has an alternative meaning rather than simply being connected to this pagan goddess. It is possible. I couldn't say yes or no until I actually got to sit with the concordance and study the issue, right? And read Jesenius to see if he connects it to any other Hebrew words and stuff like that.
It also goes on to say that Anathoth is mentioned as a native place of Abiezer, the Anathotite.
Yeah, well, that's all that's well and good, but that's from long ago. If you can't if you can't make a prophetic connection to anything in later time, then this reference to Jeremiah buying his field at Anathoth is just going to have to hang here, because we really can't understand prophetically why he did it. I mean, it's a city of refuge, which is significant if we only find out why he bought the field. But being a city of refuge, it belonged to the Levites, and that's the only reason why Jeremiah had a right to it. Otherwise, it would have belonged to Benjamin, and Jeremiah would have had no right to it.
That's interesting, yeah.
Apparently, so the call of Jeremiah happened in Anathoth.
Did all of very little of Jeremiah actually happened in Anathoth? Most of it reflects words that he was announcing in Jerusalem.
Yep, but apparently there's some sort of a picture that portrait that was done called the call of Anathoth, which it says it occurred. Excuse me, the call of Jeremiah occurred in Anathoth.
A portrait.
Yeah, by Julius Schorr von Carolsfeld.
That's a medieval painter. That doesn't mean anything. A medieval painter's Bible interpretations don't mean much. I mean, some of them are pretty or useful, but they don't mean much. Why don't we finish this chapter, Joe?
All right. Where did I stop? 24, I think. Hold on one sec.
Did you get that far? I'm sorry. Buy the field for money and take witness, for the city is given in the hands of the Chaldeans. Wow. verse 25. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead.
Thank you. And thou hast said unto me, O Yahweh God, buy thee the field for money and take witness for the city is given into the hand of the Chaldeans. And take witnesses, for the city has been given into the hand of the Chaldeans. Then came the word of Yahweh unto Jeremiah, saying, behold, I am Yahweh, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? Therefore, thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will give this city into the hand of the Chaldeans and into the hand of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and he shall take it. And the Chaldeans that fight against this city shall come and set fire on this city and burn it with the houses upon whose roofs they have offered incense unto Baal and poured out drink offerings unto other gods to provoke me to anger. For the children of Israel and the children of Judah have only done evil before me from their youth. For the children of Israel have only provoked me to anger with the work of their hands, saith Yahweh. For this city hath been to me as a provocation of my anger and of my fury from the day that they built it, even unto this day, that I should remove it from before my face. Because of all the evil of the children of Israel and of the children of Judah, which they have done to provoke me to anger, they, their kings, their princes, their priests, and their prophets, and the men of Judah, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and they have turned unto me the back and not the face. Though I taught them, rising up early and teaching them, yet they have not hearkened to receive instruction, but they set their abomination in the house which is called by my name to defile it. And they built the high places of Baal, which are in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to cause their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire unto Molech, which I commanded them not. Neither came it into my mind that they should do this abomination, to cause Judah to sin. And now, therefore, thus saith Yahweh, the God of Israel, concerning this city, whereof ye say, it shall be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon by the sword, by the famine, and by the pestilence. I just realized I'm reading the Strong's Plus version, and that's why I'm skipping some stuff. I changed back to the KJV. And now, therefore, saith Yahweh, the God of Israel, concerning this city, whereof you say, it shall be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon by the sword and by the famine and by pestilence. Behold, I will gather them out of all countries, whither I have driven them in mine anger and in my fury and in great wrath, and I will bring them again into this place, and I will cause them to dwell safely, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God, and I will give them one heart and one way that they may fear me forever, for the good of them and for their children after them. And I will make an everlasting covenant with them that I will not turn away from them to do them good, but I will put my fear in their hearts that they shall not depart from me. Yeah, I will rejoice over them to do them good, and I will plant them in this land assuredly with my whole heart and with my whole soul. For thus saith Yahweh, like as I have brought all this great evil upon this people, so I will bring them the good that I have promised them. And the fields shall be brought in this land whereof ye say, it is desolate without man or beast. It is given into the hand of the Chaldeans. Men shall buy fields for money and subscribe evidences and seal them and take witnesses in the land of Benjamin and in the places about Jerusalem, in the cities of Judah, and in the cities of the mountains, and in the cities of the valley, and in the cities of the south, for I will cause their captivity to return, saith Yahweh.
I think those sorts of prophecies have a twofold purpose. First, in an immediate sense, it was fulfilled in the Second Temple period. But second, in a distant sense, it'll be fulfilled at the end of times, when there aren't any niggers, chinks, spicks, and sand niggers left. and the children of Israel possess the entire world, right? I mean, it has that twofold sense. I always look at those prophecies that way, but that's not even like that's significant as far as I'm concerned. What's significant here is that the everlasting covenant is being made with the same children of Israel once again. So if you didn't, if your ancestors didn't come from there, that covenant's not made with you, period, end of story.
And just like you were saying before, if all the other prophecies have come true, you know, then we should expect these ones to come true. And that's like verse 42, where it says, like as I have brought all this great evil upon this people. So we see that sort of thing today. So will I bring upon them the good that I have promised them. Right. So he'll keep that promise.
Absolutely. But I went to look at the Wikipedia page when I was looking at Anatoth, and that there are evidently two places identified by archaeologists that may have been the ancient site of Anatoth. One is 10 kilometers from Jerusalem, 10 kilometers west of Jerusalem, and another is 4 kilometers northeast of Jerusalem, which is probably the more plausible. But even 4 kilometers northeast is far too far away from Jerusalem to be either the site of the place where Christ was crucified or the site of the place where Judas Iscariot was tossed into a potter's field, right? I don't make any connection with Anatoth in any of the New Testament events is what I'm trying to say. And the plausible ancient locations of Anatoth seem to support that. Because Jerusalem was a city of Benjamin. It was not a city of Judah. If you go read the book of Joshua, it was a city of Benjamin that was right on the border of Judah. And for that reason, it was chosen as the capital city because it was a large, prominent city that was also It was near to Bethlehem, and it was David that conquered that city, and he took it as his capital. But Jerusalem must have been a coveted city for a long time, even though Saul never took it. It is plausible that Jerusalem is the Salem of the earlier account of Abraham and Melchizedek, the king of Salem. That is also plausible. I'm not saying it's definite, but it's plausible. And then Mount Moriah is where Isaac was sacrificed. I mean, that's possible, but I never really tried to prove that one way or another. I don't know if it probably can't be proven ever. But Abraham was told to go sacrifice Isaac in the land of Moriah, which is the word Erez. It's not necessarily a mountain. So it might be on or around that mountain. And that was in Jerusalem. Mount Moriah was actually where the Temple of Yahweh was built. By Solomon. So I'm sorry I'm stuck on this whole Anatoth thing. There's probably something better to speak about in this chapter. I just got pulled off it.
No. Yeah, it's salient, Bill. But anyways, in verse 22, I just noticed it has a land flowing with milk and honey. And you were saying just before about... you know, once all the non-whites are gone, you know, we'll possess the whole earth. Well, this is a reference to the promised land again. So it seems like you're saying, it seems a hint at a promised land.
Yeah, right, because Palestine right now and for the last 2,000 years certainly has not flowed with milk and honey.
They couldn't even drink it.
No, I should say for the last 1,500 years. Yeah, right. The people that live there now can't even drink it. They're all lactose intolerant.
Do non-whites even, like, keep bees and get their honey? I think that would be beyond niggers, so...
Yeah, I think it is because Africa is loaded with bees, but niggers don't eat honey.
User disconnected from the
mosquitoes.
Yeah, that's simple enough for them. A mosquito net and crafting it into a burger.
Yes.
100% green. Crafted.
Right.
It's sustainable, though. You know, it's sustainable.
Right. If chinks ate mosquitoes, it would be no freaking mosquitoes, I'm telling you.
That's for real. That's for sure.
Well, they can have them.
Passing, chapter 35, I've spoken about this a lot before, but passing their sons and daughters through the fire in the land of the valley of the son of Hinnom. Gehenna in the New Testament is land of Hinnom. That's what it means. So it's basically Gehenna is a reference to the fiery trials of this life that the children of Israel in ancient times pass their own children through. But in spite of that, he's going to make an everlasting covenant with those same people. And people don't believe that all Israel is saved, right? And here he's talking about the people that pass their own children through the fires in the valley of the son of Hinnom, that he's going to make an everlasting covenant with them. So you can't tell me that all Israel is not going to be saved. If you could do something that odious and that fucked up, and Yahweh God is still going to make an everlasting covenant with you simply because of who you are. All Israel is certainly saved, not for anything we do ourselves, but because God keeps his word. It's that simple. And because there's a greater battle going on than our personal battles.
That's a good point, too. It's a battle between good and evil, not, you know, you and Joe Bloggs who lives down the street who didn't say goodbye to you one day, you know, didn't greet you one day.
Yeah, right. It's a battle between good and evil and between Yahweh and those who rebel against him, who openly rebel against him. And it's to teach his children a lesson. So if you're exterminated for your sins in this life simply because you sin, then how do you learn that lesson? We should all be exterminated. None of us should learn a lesson because none of us are worthy. But he said, I will cause the captivity to return. Yeah, the people that doubt that the CI people that doubt that all Israel is saved, they're just clowns. They're just clowning. NATO's just a clown. And all the other turkeys.
You know, I think he if he was a smart guy, he would have smartened up by now. Like, he needs to smarten up and just start thinking logically instead of emotionally. And
he can't do that, though. He hated me because I didn't think emotionally.
You couldn't connect.
I wouldn't defend his emotions.
Yeah.
What it boiled down to. I didn't have time to defend his emotions. Let's put it that way. I did try to give him a fair shake and look at what his grievances were, but I never had time for that bullshit. How do you like my answer to Noble this morning?